David, whether you have a few weeks old puppy or a senior who's seen multiple decades, any dog person like me knows the most valuable thing in the world is spending time with your pet.
Yep.
The farmer's dog makes it easy to keep them healthy, which can give you more quality years with your lovely dog.
Yeah, well, I've heard Farmer's Dog makes and delivers fresh, healthy dog food. And, you know, that's what everyone's looking for. It's recommended by vets, nutritionally balanced. It's made from human-grade ingredients, safe, clean kitchens. All that stuff matters.
Yeah. I mean, you love your dog. Why get the lousy food for your dog? Farmer's Dog is the best. Traditional dry and wet dog food options are extremely processed.
Sometimes
they use
dogs...
much lower quality. Yeah.
you put it in their bowl and they go, what is this kibble? And they knock it away. What is this canned goo?
Oh, yeah. I've had our dog, yeah, look at the bowl and then kind of crank its neck up and look at me. And it was like, really?
They go, really? Why don't you go first? You want a bite of this? Slop?
And it makes that sound.
Here you go, dog.
So Farmer's Dog isn't just higher quality food. They also send the food pre-portioned specifically for your dog based on their unique nutritional needs. It makes it easy to help your dog reach and stay at their ideal weight, David, and which is one of the biggest indicators of a full, healthy life. A fresh diet has been found to have all sorts of benefits, David, from healthier coat and skin, better breath, if you want to kiss your dog, and even easier digestion and smaller and better poops.
Let's look at a clip. It doesn't matter if your dog's young or old, it's always the right time to invest in their health for more happy years with your dog. Get 50% off your first box at farmersdog.com/fly.
Let the Farmer's Dog know we sent you. Use your code or click podcast after you sign up for your first box. My kids loved the Jackass movies. They loved them so much. They were obsessed by them. And then they tried to do some of the physical stunts. Let's just say I'm very well versed in ER language. My kids had 28 concussions.
Yeah, you know, Knoxville, that coming out, he got offered SNL. We're going to talk about that. But the that coming out was so breakthrough. It was so crazy what he was doing. And I loved it so much. I was like so jealous, you know, to see how cool it was.
Well, the other thing he did great, and I can't remember which movie it was, but they put him in prosthetic makeup as this grumpy.
Oh, bad grandpa or something?
Yeah. And he was really skilled at that. And I assume a lot of it was improvised, but that made me envious. I would love to be in prosthetic makeup out on the street, kind of annoying people.
Yeah, and letting them step on your nuts. Like he had his nuts hanging out all the time from his shorts, and then
he had a permanent vice grip installed. It was called a Hooter clamp, and so he had definitive, consistent pain on his testicles all the time, so that when he would get on the set to do Jackass, he wouldn't feel like scared at all. So he also had an electroshock therapy apparatus.
Jesus.
Called a zone vest. And that would give him just small little kind of pin. I'm making it sound.
I was like, God damn.
I love this element of, I'm so glad I was around for this part of show business. Shoot the rehearsal, look at our hair, be authentic. Yeah. It'd be like Frank Sinatra coming out, takes off his toupee, Dean Martin comes out, you know, they do a breathalyzer test on him.
Yeah.
You know, you want to see.
I wish, behind the curtain.
Behind the curtain, that was the name I wanted for the thing, but you went with the bug. We got to have a fly in there. Why an insect?
Why? I know you hated the part about the fly on the wall because the word fly kind of grosses you out, right?
Well, I haven't met a person who's like, you know what I really like? I like puppies, kittens, and flies.
You know what is really an underrated animal? The fly. Like,
well, isn't it an insect?
No, Dana.
Don't you watch Planet Earth's channel?
Let's look at a clip from Planet Earth where they say, no, it's a filthy fucking bug that hangs out on turds.
Right, and not necessarily walls.
Right, so, but we, you know.
So we made that up, and.
Well, we had
so
a lot. We had Razzmatazz.
Get mad at us.
Razzmatazz
don't write
was
me
good.
A letter.
Remember Razzmatazz was going to be one?
Oh, I like that one. Yeah.
Because it's sort of vague and nothing.
And that's showbiz.
Oh, yeah, that's showbiz.
I thought that was great.
You liked that too, didn't you? Well, how did this piece of shit squeak through?
Piece of shit squeak. Yeah, you could do that if you spelled shit differently. So it's like, hey, piece of squeak
everything
through.
For a while there was like, that could be a title. It's like, oh, I remember one I thought of. It was so fucking stupid. I can't remember, but
well, that's like working on your 8x10. When I came into Hollywood in the 80s, I was, you meet people like, yeah, I've been working on my 8x10 for about 8 months. I go, are you writing anything? No, I've been working on that 8x10. So like just sitting around for days trying to think of a pithy name.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, I did a corporate date once for a car company and they drove me out in a go-kart, or I drove a go-kart on stage and stuff. Or you come in a gurney and I go, guys, I got to do an hour of stand-up. That buys me like 6 seconds of goodwill that I came in a harness. Ladies and gentlemen. And then it's like 10 minutes later. It's like,
Yeah, your act. Believe me, I have a special coming out. I'm looking at it and watching the editing going, God damn. Anyway, we should get back to Johnny Knoxville.
What is the name? Sorry. What's to it? Finish the thought. I just woke up.
What's the name of the special?
What's the name of the special?
Fly on the Stage. I know, okay. it's such a good title.
We got our big laugh. That's it.
That's it. All right, Johnny Knoxville.
That's the funniest thing I've heard this morning. Fly on the Stage.
No, Johnny, I was just telling Dana, that's Dana and I'm David.
Johnny, welcome to the most casual podcast you'll ever be on.
I've been excited about this. Thanks for having me.
Johnny, this is called Every Question You've Ever Been Asked and You're Going to Get Asked Again.
We studied Howard Stern, all the other shows, and we want to ask identical things, and I'm going to comment as Howard throughout the interview. You don't have to think this. You can just check out for the next hour.
You guys were great on Stern the other day.
Oh, did you see?
Yeah. I listened to it. Stern constantly, and I heard your guys' show, and you guys were great.
Did you like that? I kept trying to leave. I kept going. All right, Dana, Howard, thanks for coming by. And he's like, "What are you doing?" I go, "Well, it's an hour 48. What are we doing? I need some mystery."
David's production company is called One Foot Out the Door.
No shit.
I don't know if that means anything, but he's always kind of wanting to leave. He's a little fragile, and he's. Do you have a Zoom? Do you have a light in your face right now, David?
No, I look good.
You do look good. Anyway, you did Howard Stern. Did you get in there at 5:30 in the morning, kind of thing too?
Yeah. I got up at 5:30. It was there by 6.
I'm so spoiled. I never have an alarm at this point in my life, so it freaked me out. I was up at 3:45. Every second I checked the clock.
Whoa. Yeah. When you know you have to wake up, it gets in your head.
Yeah. He would text me, Stern would text me and go, I wouldn't sleep if I were you. You better be fucking funny in the morning. I go, God damn, what is it?
No pressure.
Who cares?
I don't remember what I said. Johnny Knoxville, is that your real name?
Let's get to it.
Philip John Clapp is my real name.
Mine's fucking Gary Gonorrhea. Wow.
Mine's Dana Garno, and I switched it to Dana Carvey. Dana Garno was my stage name, and I hated that early days of stand-up. Please welcome Dana Garno.
No, that's just everyone said it wrong, right?
Oh, God, yes.
That's a tough one. But Clapp
that sucks.
Johnny Knoxville is...
That's a cool name.
That goes off the tongue nicely. Johnny Knoxville. It's very nice.
I was going to be Scotty Scottsdale. I'm from Arizona. Yeah. And then everyone said, nothing will make you cooler. And I said, all right, I give up.
His other website is called Perennial Senior. I don't know what that means, but...
Me?
You're always the kid. I don't care how old you're old. But you'll always be the kid. You'll be boyish. You're like Johnny Carson.
Johnny's so excited. He's like, I hope they just never ask me one thing. This is going long enough and I don't want to answer anything.
No, I can listen to you guys all day. You're so funny.
I have some sort of, like, before we get to SNL, a couple questions.
Yeah.
So, like, Jackass, huge in our family. Love it.
Thank you.
Two boys. Had a few injuries, not blaming you, but it was it was BMX skateboarding, but they love Jackass so much. And I just wondered
time.
If for you,
oh,
having,
did Danny, he thinks he met them. Did he meet them?
I think I met them with you one time, Dana.
You met Dex. Yes. Okay. You remember it was you, me, and Patton Oswalt.
Yeah.
At the 50th anniversary of Paramount. And we took a big photo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where were you standing? Like everyone in show business was in these bleachers.
Oh, I was in one of those. Did they bump me for the next one?
I don't know who I was standing next to.
Montel Williams?
Yeah.
I got up in the stands and it's, you know, it's Meryl Streep, George Clooney, it's everybody. And then I'm next to Billy Bob Thornton, and Billy's so eccentric. He goes, "You're the one I really wanted to meet. I'm so glad you're next to me." I go, "Really? Not Jerry Lewis?" So right. He's the coolest.
Yeah, that was a real thing. Kirk Douglas was there.
The attack of the super
John
chins.
Landis was there, and he was wow. really funny and just talking so much shit. very rebellious and funny.
But it was like we were in Boss, because when I would look at old photos, black and white photos of movie TV stars from the 1940s or 50s, I knew they were all dead. There's a certain darkness to it. So I said that to Billy Bob Thornton. "We're just going to be down in a hallway and we'll be long gone." He goes, yeah, I know. We were really into the darkness of that photo.
Right.
Hey, I have a peppier story. Johnny, I did this. Same fucking picture, I think. And it was for Paramount's like 90th, right? So I think they do them every 10 years. So I squeaked in on one. And it had scaffolding. So it was like on the Paramount lot. And they met you in a holding area. And I didn't believe that everyone in the picture was... It was 90 stars, right? It's kind of what you guys did.
Yeah.
So everyone was a big fucking monster star. I couldn't believe it. And they were all there. So I go in the holding tank... And we go to get a drink, and they go, "Oh, we can't serve drinks because most of everyone's old and we have scaffolding." And I'm like, fuck, what a buzzkill. So luckily, Spadoodle-Doo has two Jack Daniels airplane bottles in his sock for emergencies.
Right.
So this was an emergency. So I get up there, and I'm getting on the scaffolding. It's Jim Carrey, Sharon Stone, Michael Douglas, you know, everyone. The same thing as you guys. I think Mickey Rooney, Dana's buddy, was there. So anyway, I get up there, and Harrison Ford is for some reason, down the scaffolding from me. But while they're like loading Liz Taylor on a crane or whatever they're doing, I'm sitting there, and then I have my Diet Coke, so I'm going to get my little Jacques Daniels out and have a little nippy nip. So I go like this, you know, I snap the top out of my sock. I go, and Harrison Ford's ears go up like a Labrador. He goes, "Huh?" Like a Doberman, you know? And then I go, "Uh-oh." And he looks over, and he walks over, and he goes, "You got any more of that?" And I go, okay.
"Hey, this is going to trend.
This is great." So I go, fucking, first of all, Harrison Ford is the coolest dude in the world. So I immediately am excited to talk to him. He's just like nervous too. He's like, "Time to kill." He goes, "You got any more of those?" And that's when my star fucking collided with my alcoholism. And I go, "No." It wasn't even a contest.
Oh, no. Han Solo went home empty.
Can you believe it? He had a Solo cup.
Billy Bob Thornton got me a beer. Same thing.
Oh, he did?
Well, we had a little cocktail afterwards. And then I was starstruck by Jane Fonda. She was leaving, and I tried to get a selfie with her, and her whole being collapsed. So if she's listening, I'm really sorry about that. Billy Bob Thornton said, "You like another beer?" And I'm like, "Okay." And then I go, "Jane Fonda." And my wife's such a fan of hers. And so anyway.
Right.
Well,
Johnny Knoxville. Let's focus on Johnny for a second.
Not Johnny yet. Yeah, Johnny, we're going to have too much of Johnny in a second. So I go, "Here's my little drink." And I go, "Glug, glug, glug." And then I look down the scaffolding when I slowly felt the second one. And I think I see him lift his fedora up, and he looks at me, and he's like shaking his head like, "You motherfucker." Because I had another one. And then I go,
"Sorry, David.
I didn't know that was another end to that. Okay. I know. It just kept going. But anyway, I think we worked it out later. But anyway, back to Johnny.
Johnny, my question for this as a father with kids, like I was terrible at watching my kids go down on a skateboard down a giant hill. My wife could look. I couldn't look.
Right.
One of my kids, we named him the heart attack kid because there were 23 ER visits. They both had 5 to 6 concussions, multiple fractures. They're fine now. They stopped. And I just wondered, are you... When your kid's running down a hill or looks like they're going to fall, are you just like a normal parent, or are you so acclimated to stunts that you're like, "Oh, I've seen someone fall downstairs. Steve-O did that. That's no big deal." Or how does that... That's my question.
Yeah, I'm, oddly enough, a real helicopter parent when it comes to safety.
Like, me too.
You know, however my sense of humor is and how I deal with them is one thing, but... If they're on a swing when they're little or climbing on the monkey bars, I was right under them. And I don't, that's just how I am. And I guess I know how, the last thing I want for them is to get hurt. right?
Because you've been hurt and you know.
So, I, like any parent, but I was a little more cautious with them.
Right. I didn't want to be Captain No all the time, you know, so you're sort of like, it's okay, Dad, we're okay. They're in a homemade tree fort above a street, climbing around. So I try not to control them too much, and I had a sense of humor about it. They bought me a book when they were like 10 with mom, and it was called Worst Case Scenario, like how to survive a bumblebee attack in an airplane, stuff like that. So it became kind of a runner that my imagination gets away from me, and I was very protective in that way. But yeah, not to prevent true. 23 ER visits. Anyway, David?
yes, Johnny, you gave the right answer. I've got a question and answer thing right here, and that was the right one. Mm-hmm. You passed the first question. Second of all, when you do this, first of all, I love Jackass growing up, and I wanted to hit you up. You know, I see you out and about sometimes. You're always very cool, and I wanted to hit you up in the early days because Jackass looks so fun. I wanted to go there, and then I realized I'm such a colossal pussy. There was really nothing I could do. I can skateboard a little bit, but I thought there's no stunt. I couldn't do the full circle skateboarding, you know?
David, you there was don't really have to be good at anything. That's the whole idea. You know, we're not going to have you. If you're good at something, you are not doing that stunt.
Oh, I like the thinking. Okay, good. Yeah. I'm like, I can skateboard. Good. We'll put bees on your dick.
Well, that's it. You can do all that kind of stuff.
What's that?
You can do all that kind of stuff. Requires no skill to have bees on your dick.
No. All you got to do is, a lot of my stunts, all I have to do is stand in one spot or hold on to something. I've really narrowed it down to those two things I do good. but like people that we bring in, like most of the time, like celebrity guests, they can just be peanut gallery. They can just be funny.
Yeah.
We won't go after it. Some people we make a decision not to go after. We'll have that discussion before. It's like, okay, we're not going to go after. But like in this case with Eric Andre and Tyler, the Creator, and Machine Gun Kelly, Jeff knew them. And I was like, Jeff, do they get the full treatment? And he's like, kill them. Right. I'm like, okay, they get the full treatment.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that you talk ahead of time because you have to, because sometimes celeb types are a little more frail and fragile physically and ego-wise, so they wouldn't love it. But if you know them a little bit...
They don't know how to take it. Like, I've pranked people in my private life. A friend of mine who was an actor, I don't want to give a name, but I kind of went after him like I went after my guys, and it hurt his... He was confused by it, and I was a little obsessed with it. I kind of... Because it was making my other friend laugh. And it ended up hurting his feelings. And he was just confused. I'm like, okay, I can never go after civilians again. I felt like a monster. So there's a very hard line of people I will go after and people I won't.
Yeah, because in the movie, when you, it looks so fun and everyone laughs at the worst pain it is. They just laugh so hard. And they're also like used to it. Like I think in the movie, that guy, is it Aaron? Aaron gets a lot of it in the movie.
He always gets a lot of, he's like the whipping boy. He's a very important part of the show. He's like the nail with the schlemiel, the schlemile. He's the schlemiel.
That's what I was thinking. But he when you, I think Dana saw it too, he wears a cup and then they try to test the cup and they rack him in the nuts. They have Naganu, UFC guy, punch him in the nuts. I thought more that would break his whole cervix or whatever's down there. I don't know. Hip bones.
Whatever's down there.
Whatever. I don't know. I'm not some doctor.
Yeah.
But
you're not, that you're
was,
not an MD.
Oh, and then they did... the worst was the pogo stick because it's an inexact science. And I think it... And then it started bleeding. Now, does he have any central nervous system? I'm like, this guy keeps... I go, this is the same guy for four in a row. A softball pitcher, a punch, and then the pogo stick was just like, hey, fuck it, he's not getting hurt enough. Let's just
that on the same day as the softball pitcher. For some reason, Jeff and I would schedule these things on the same day, so he was taking a lot of trauma. And there is a cut of the pogo stick bit that's 7 or 8 minutes long. That is hilarious because the peanut gallery is just murdering Aaron the whole time because we've been filming with them all day and we love him, but he has a way of setting everyone off. And the peanut gallery was just murdering them. And it was so fun. But we had to cut it down just for the film.
Sure.
But, Aaron gets gold. Aaron gets gold. But
yeah, he does. He does. I mean, for the purpose of your movie, he's great. And I thought you would be more like Seinfeld and just sort of be in there and let the craziness around you. But after a little bit, you got in. And I said, oh, good. He's getting in, which is tough because we're all getting older. I don't know. You're 80. I have no idea how old you are. But you're...
72 this month.
You must... I'm fragile for absolutely no reason, but you have to be fragile because you just got your ass kicked over and over and over for work. And I think that you still do it is cool. It's hard, but I'm sure people might want it and you have to do it. You feel like that?
Do I have to do it? No. I, you know, God help me, but nothing is more fun than filming Jackass. And yeah, I did take some shots in this film. And also, I backload my biggest stunts till the end of the film. So I had like 3 big stunts left to go after the bull. But after the blow, just, you know, I broke my wrist, my rib, I got a concussion, a brain hemorrhage, just spent the weekend in the hospital. Took me a couple months, 3 months to come back online, really, in my head. So we had to cancel all the rest of my stunts. Damn. So it's like, jeez. I didn't get to take as many shots as I wanted, but maybe that's good. It worked out for the best because I've had a lot of concussions, and my neurologist is like, I think you're done with concussions.
And now for a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture. You know, the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing. It's a lifestyle that may not be for you, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. How? Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends all before you head out the door. Your money's a workaholic, but you don't have to be because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Hey, Fidelity. Can I get a second opinion on stocks in the Fidelity app?
With Fidelity, it's easy to get an outside opinion from independent experts in a single score.
And then?
When you're ready, trade U.S. stocks and ETFs with no commissions.
That's right.
I am always right.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and a retail Fidelity account. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at Fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
What I was curious about is Dave mentioned the word fun. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen people that joyous in the world, like after the stunt
in the world.
Well, the loudest sustained laughter, I think that's the flip side to Jackass, is if the guy does a massive hit and it's just massively hilarious and fun and jumping around and screaming, so it's just joyous,
right? You know, a lot of that comes from sometimes it's really funny and sometimes we're doing something really dangerous and a lot of nervous energy comes out and everyone's laughing.
Yeah,
but it is everyone, even though we're giving each other hell and people get, you know, have PTSD and everyone loves it, even though that they don't know what's going on and I'm just killing them all day long. They love it.
Yeah. Well, it's like such a fun thing with dudes and that's why it works. Everyone laughing is all fun. I mean, even movies like Grown Ups, when people say if they like those movies, it's like, oh, you guys are buddies and you're all goofing around and we should have had a half hour blooper reel at the end because that's the stuff people love, you know?
Yeah, because if you're having fun, the audience is going to have fun. It's just like watching someone on a talk show. If the person's on a talk show having fun, then everyone watching is going to have
fun.
That's right.
Yeah, my last question for Jackass, and we'll talk about SNL, was Machine Gun Scarecrow. Machine Gun Kelly, I thought you could have made him like a scarecrow and put him out because he kind of looks like a scarecrow.
He has a definite Ray Bolger vibe to him. Yeah.
You put him out and have real and tie him down to a thing and make all the birds come pick at him. But I guess
if he's tied down, then we can do any number of things to him.
You know? Once he agrees to that, you change it.
Yeah. Okay. We'll tell him it's about birds, but as soon as he's tied down, we can do anything we want to him. But he is a tall, lean man.
Yeah.
He took a good punch.
He's lanky. He's the definition of lanky.
He showed up and he's got a tattoo of the skull and Jackass Skull and Crutches on him. So it's like, if you got that, you're getting the full treatment.
Yeah, he got a good smack. And I love when it's never when you think it is. And that's the funniest part. You set him up for a different bit and then something else happens on the way, which is great.
Yeah. And this is my last question before we go to SNL. And I'm sure you've been asked this, but like my son had showed me a long time ago the one about the guy puts the toy car up his butt, you know? And that was so huge in our house and all over the country. The way it played out, it was played so straight with that doctor and everything. Did you ever get ideas for stunts and then you reject them out of hand, even to yourself? Like, it's like, what is rejected? When are you like, oh, we could do this to this guy and then electroshock him there and then hang him up? Do you ever kind of go, no, that's too much? You don't even pitch it.
I write most of my ideas by myself and then I'll pitch them to Jeff, but in the room, terrible things get thrown out. You know how
a brainstorm session,
you know, funny in the room, things that you'll never repeat to anyone.
Just like comedy writing. Yeah.
With murdering air in some way, you know,
that poor guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, a lot of shit gets thrown out. It's just, we know it's, and we're not going to do it, but sometimes if it's so far over the line, but it still makes us laugh, we'll try to figure out how to do it. And sometimes you can reel it in just a bit here and there and it can work.
You start by saying, okay, they're naked. Now what?
Yeah. Yeah. It's always funnier with their cock out.
God damn, I would never show any.
Yeah, first we take a sledgehammer to their balls, and then we do them. They go down the gauntlet,
and then the denouement.
The worst one was probably for me to watch. The cringiest was putting the queen bee. Where did you hide it on his wiener? Like, you put it under his dick?
Yeah, I put it under the shaft. I placed it under the shaft.
You.
Yeah. Trying to think where that is exactly. Got it.
And the queen bee's like this. Come save me. And then he lets all the bees out, if people haven't seen it. And all the bees come immediately to the guy's dick. And I'm just like, that's the one where I go, I can't even. And he's getting stung and stung and screaming. It was Steve-O, right?
Yeah. Steve-O. God, he'd been doing meditation and he thought he could like overpower, you know.
Pain. Yeah,
he told me that before. Luck. I'm like, okay, we'll see how that meditation is doing for you.
Jeez. did he get paid in teeth whitening? Anyway.
He got some big teeth. Well, they're all
he's
fake,
got some toofs.
He has a new set of teeth for every film.
Oh, he does have great teeth. I have an entree question that's very generic to begin our discussion about you and SNL. What was more terrifying, being on the rocket, going into the water, whatever your most amazing, or being on the bull in the latest film, or coming out as a host? What was your nerve factor when you, Johnny Knoxville, or were you cool with it? Or was it usually people, you don't do that. Well, anyway, how'd you feel?
Yeah, I would definitely rather ride the rocket or stand in front of a bull. It was, it was nerve wracking because I have a fear of speaking in public, right? And with like the audience, I was like, that really freaked me out. And it's SNL and it's not something that I do a lot.
It's hard to figure out. You don't really know what you're doing, probably.
No, because I didn't. And I remember we were going over some bit and I was talking with Fred Armisen, and he was really sweet and helped me a lot.
Is very
and
sweet.
And I'm like, I don't know kind of what to do here. And he goes, you don't have to do anything here. It's like, it's not about you in this one. It was focused on I was like the straight man and I wasn't realizing it. Right.
Yeah.
And just little things like that.
But that calms you down a little bit. If it's the funny is like happening around you, and it's funnier if you stay straight.
Yeah, stay straight. Like, don't. So there was a little of that, trying to get used to that. And the rehearsals helped me a ton. Everyone was very supportive. I know a couple of bits that I did that I wasn't really doing that well in the rehearsals. And, you know, Lauren gave me a little pep talk before. about the cream will always rise to the top or something. I don't know.
Oh no, terrifying.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, so I'm down
there's
here.
There's cream and there's a top.
I'll be here while I'm shooting.
Yes. You're going to bring it up. Shit. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's almost nothing you can say. It's just because coming out for the monologue, Dana and I are stand-ups, and when we go back and host that monologue, even I'm sure Dana would agree, your like heart's beating like, shit, man, this is so different because it's so loud when you come out. That band is so loud. And everyone's going crazy, and this, and you see the jib camera come in, and you're like, "Shit, this is it."
But I will say it's fun to bring it up because it goes back to Don Pardo. But John, your opening monologue descended in the cast doing a prank, and it ended up with Don Pardo kicking you in the balls, right?
No,
or was that the first sketch?
Seth Meyers was out there next to me, and he was supposed to hit me in the balls at one point.
Okay.
Like in my monologue.
Right.
So when I got to a certain word, that was his signal to hit me in the balls. But like three words before that, I hit him in the balls. And I absolutely smoked him. And he just wasn't expecting it. And he could barely perform the next scene. It was just a perfect hit.
Wait a minute. You don't need much power if it's in the right spot.
You go on the show. And because of Jackass, there's going to be a lot of people getting kicked in the balls. Now, so Seth Meyers was not ready for it, or he wasn't wearing padding, or how did that happen?
Or anybody, I was going to do it, but I thought it would be funnier if
he wasn't prepared.
Spontaneous if I hit him.
Holy shit!
And I was right.
So you improvised.
I was right.
So not telling anyone. You go out to host SNL. You're not telling anyone the secret plan. He's supposed to kick you in the balls. You preempt him, and then he's out of it for about the next 10 minutes or the next sketch.
Yeah, he was really. He could barely walk to the next sketch.
Oh my god! I've done it. You've been ever been looking for your keys? You go where? And you tap your nut wrong, and you just drop to the ground and go call work.
Right. It was.
I'm going to wear a cup. We're going to have dinner someday, but I'm going to wear a steel cup.
You guys are safe.
We're safe. Okay. Yeah. But so Don Pardo, I was doing a deep dive this morning. He did not do a fake kick to you, Don Pardo.
No. That was Seth Meyers getting.
Okay. God, the web, fucking web got it wrong. They confused Don Pardo because I thought it'd be so great.
Don Pardo kicked me in the nuts.
Oh, I love Don Pardo kicking
Johnny Knoxville. Yeah, it would have been incredible.
Was it a knee or was it just a hand tap?
It was the back of my hand in full. Oh. Like I could feel the outline of his cock and balls on the back of my hand. It was a perfect shot. I don't want to brag, but it was a perfect shot.
So, do you mind go into more detail? Like, what you felt in the? Yeah, that was kind of he's being a little
he was
evasive.
To the left as I struck him.
Yeah. Did you hurt your hand at all? Was he semi-erect just being excited to be out on the show? Or
no, but there was probably some swelling afterwards.
Okay.
That's good.
All right, well,
now, Johnny, you're a professional too, because in the movie and the show, sometimes you just have to get someone, and so you know what you're doing. So one take. By the way, that never happens on the show, something that is really unexpected like that, and I'm sure it was talked about after you left.
Yeah, that was at the after party. Zeth
That's
with
hot,
ice,
though. That's
ice
great.
On his crotch. Hey, thanks a lot, man. Hey, really sorry. It just got away from me. I don't know why I did that. It's okay. We're cool. We're cool,
I'm
man.
I'm really good
right?
at half-assed sorries.
Did you remember anybody in that cast that you got along with? I think you said Fred Armisen just now. I'm trying to picture the era of, because you know cast changed a lot. So that was Fred, you said, was there, and Seth.
Horatio Sands.
Horatio, yeah. Okay.
Rob Riggle.
Oh yeah, I did a scene with Rob Riggle
Amy
when I went back.
Bowler.
So that might have been around the same time. Oh, Amy, okay. Who was doing Update? Do you remember?
No, I have no idea.
Would have been Tina, maybe 2005.
Yeah,
is she still there with Jimmy Fallon?
Would have been nicer to me. They were so supportive. It was a scary experience, but it ended up being like a totally positive experience in my mind. And it's something about like it being live. It's just like getting in the bull ring. It's like, okay, this is what I'm doing today. Yeah. And you just the train's going by and you jump on it. Yeah. And then you're off.
It goes by really fast.
That I cognized it, you know, in my mind.
Yeah.
And when you host it, just for our listeners, flies on the wall. Once the show starts and you're the host, they take you, like they grab you. Like after a sketch, if you have a quick change or to get ready to go, they kind of, you know, you're on autopilot in that sense. There's nothing else you can do. And how did you handle the cue cards? Were you okay with it? Did you try to fake it or did you have a technique?
No. They said, read off the cue cards. And I
totally agree.
You guys do this more than me, so I'm going to read off the cue cards.
Once you pick an eye line and stay with it, it's less disturbing than going to the person, to the card, back to the person.
Yeah.
You know, especially in a over-the-shoulder shot. So
I may have made that mistake once or twice, going off the cards and looking at the person, because you kind of want to make a connection with them, but it honestly looks better, like they tell you, just read off the cards.
Yeah,
Phil Hartman had a great technique. Sorry, David, where because you have three sets of cards if it's two people talking. So Phil would kind of pretend to sort of look away. He'd look behind himself just for a second casually to get the line over his shoulder and then come back at you with it. There was a lot of technique when you're a cast member to not get caught.
Yeah.
You know,
you could drink it up when they're talking and then come back because they won't be on you. Sometimes I think the host is always in black, but you have to have different colors for the people at home so everyone knows who's talking. And sometimes right before a scene, I'm like, Sandler, are you green or blue? And because I don't know which, what does my guy say? Because I'm a professional actor.
I think I was red for all 7 years.
Oh,
I
sometimes
think I
you was, can request wow. and they go, oh, you like to be this. And then there's seniority.
I always knew it was John Lovitz's card because each letter was, he only had one letter on each card. Because Mr. Magoo was doing the best he could.
You know, Farley had these Johnny's glasses.
Lovitz is like the Aaron McGee of SNL.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Are you jealous? I'm funny. Because I once told John, you know, you're funny naturally. You don't have to try. Really? There's a lot of thought behind it. When did you turn to Mae West, motherfucker? I don't know. Are you
it's
happy to see
acting.
Me?
Or is acting.
Acting. But no, he's the funniest. John. Yeah, but go ahead, David.
Yeah, I was saying that Farley wears glasses just like yours, Johnny, and he would go on update and he'd squint so much we gave him so much shit that we go, just wear glasses. Nobody gives a shit. And then he'd wear glasses and squint for no reason. We're like, are you just used to squinting? Do you know what squinting is or what it's for? But
David, I don't know.
So
it's
when
hard
you
to do
okay,
Farley.
We'll get into some basics. Now this just go just bear with this, Johnny, because I'm older. You do is you doing the before you got offered SNL, you were doing some form of Jackass. Was you getting electrocuted in the Nards? Is that what was it? Your first bit? That's the first bit I saw. You're standing against a wall and someone's hitting you with a stun gun or something.
Yeah, I did an article for Big Brother. It started as an article where I was going to test self defense equipment on myself: pepper spray, stun gun, taser gun, and I was going to shoot myself in the chest with a 38. While wearing a bulletproof vest. And
Jesus.
Jeff Tremaine, who ended up directing Jackass, said, well, you should also film it too. And we'll put it in the skateboard video.
Smartest thing that's ever happened. Yeah. Smartest thing.
Yeah. So that
was your audition tape?
Yeah. I guess it ended
there
up
were,
being.
There were different factions that came together, and it's a story.
It's a long process, right? Where you do that, and then you do it a little more, and then it catches on, so you do some more, and then that ultimately gets to Lauren's desk or somebody.
We did a couple of skateboard videos, right, where I was doing like, it was a skateboarding magazine, and I'd known Jeff Weil and wanted to write for the magazine, but I didn't skateboard, but I found my way in by doing stuff in the videos and writing about you know, like participatory journalism type of thing. And then Jeff and I talked and wanted to do a show. And he goes, I went to school with Spike Jones. Let's see if he wants to be a part of it. And Spike came on board and we had the footage from the skateboard videos, right? And we cut a little 10-minute tape. And we took it out and shopped it around. And MTV and Comedy Central showed a lot of interest. And at that time, it got to SNL, got to Lauren, the tape that we made. And I met him at the Polo Lounge, Beverly Hills Hotel.
Hello. And,
which was surreal, right? I was just waiting tables 6 months before. a few months before. And now,
so you cleared a table by reflex at the polo lounge.
You're like the head of show business now.
Right. The president of show business I'm sitting across from. Mm-hmm. And he's offering me 3 to 5 minutes each week to do what I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was surreal. But we were pretty far along. We were getting ready to shoot the pilot. And
shit.
Do I go on an established show? Oh, by the way, I'm so lucky that he offered. Do I go on an established show where I'm probably not going to have a lot of control over what we're doing? Or do I kind of bet on my friends and me and my friends? And I ultimately bet on me and my friends. And it could have been a disastrous move, but I felt like we kind of were on to something. And
it's got to be hard to turn down Lauren. It's got to be tough because it's such a big deal.
It was brutal.
Because it's so flattering. Yeah.
Yeah. You feel like an asshole.
It's probably going to fail. What we're doing is probably going to fail. And I'm going to regret turning down Lauren Michaels. But
would you have been able to do what you do? Or, I mean, there's some NBC standards, but was it you and your squad, or was it you?
It was going to be me. And, you know.
Yeah. Tough one.
I wasn't going
to. It's not as fun.
It would just be me.
Yeah.
So I don't have Jeff. I don't have Spike.
Spike's great.
Yeah. Spike has been so instrumental to
talented.
All of this, right? Just
getting
off the ground at the beginning, because Jeff and I are just two dopes. But you get Spike Jones involved, and it's like, oh, these two dopes might know something. We didn't know anything, but we got respect because of Spike. We got an agent because of Spike. We got an attorney because of Spike. Spike has been so, contributed so much to the films and TV show over the years. Just
sure.
Well, the aesthetic, brilliant. And I don't know if you guys talked about this with Spike, but you guys are out at lakes and rural areas. It's never shot too complicated. It's very reality show vibe, wide shots. And, that added to it, the authenticity vibe of it.
Right. Well, we were
never was slick.
Thank you. We were trying to decide in the beginning, like, because we were doing the skateboard videos, which look exactly like Jackass, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were shot exactly like Jackass because that's all we could do. That's how we could shoot like this, because we knew how to do that. Very simply.
Like a cheap look kind of thing.
Like a punk band that only knows 2 or 3 chords, right? This is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
But Jeff and I were talking like, do I host from a desk and then go out to the street to do certain things? And we talked to Spike and he's like, no, he goes, you're already doing it. It should look like the Big Brother videos.
God, another great idea.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, because that would have ruined it if somebody went in and slickicized it and made too many angles.
Yeah, but we didn't know. So it took Spike to go, you're already doing
it. Sure.
Yeah. Well, I checked up your celebrity net worth this morning, so I think you made the right choice. I don't know how accurate it is, but it's very healthy.
Those things are never accurate.
I know. You never know. I do think that people come in and do films, short films. I don't know. It's a little bit awkward. You're outside the cast and you bring your thing in. I don't know. I think that's kind of a tough position. So I think you made the right decision, but it's tough to turn
Lauren
down.
Lauren was smart to bring you in, of course, and get in
to
the mix.
To try to get you. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's a good eye, too. Because, you know, to see that and see how interesting that is and how it could be cool, because I was hooked immediately. And you get Spike, who I think has done some Beastie Boys videos and obviously a bunch of cool things, and have a starkness to it, and whatever the vibe was, just that it works, and it worked on all levels. You worked, you being out there. I always thought you were a skater. Yeah. I was always wondering if you were a skater.
Yeah. No. I skated like when I was 13 or 14, broke my ankle. And my dad just took my skateboard and tossed it in the woods because I was going to miss baseball. Right? I always played. Baseball was my sport growing up.
In the woods.
tossed it in the woods. My Tony Alba.
Woods board. Are 5 feet away.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Literally 5 feet away, because in Tennessee, we had a pony in my backyard, you know.
Oh, nice. Love Tennessee. Love Nashville. By the way, I did talk to Lauren during that time. And I said, really, Johnny, who? Knoxville, what? What do you think? You know, it's, all the kids love it. It's sort of pranks. It's physical. And I think it'll be really good with, like, our young demographic. And Johnny seems like a really nice man, and we're going to, like, fucking bring him in. And I go, I don't know. He's heating up on MTV. Mike, Dana, trust me. He knows a good deal when he sees it. And then after you took MTV, he was really mad. No, I made that up.
We're going to put honey on John Lovitz's nutsack and just let the bees go to town. Maybe add a skunk. You know, it's up to him.
Yeah. Lovitz is going to sit on a phallic-shaped child.
We're going to zap his nuts when they walk on the monologue.
Two-year episode in 2005, and it's like happens to the best of us as far as what you can do comedically in this universe. In 2005, you had You Might Be a Gay Redneck If was one of your sketches.
Oh, the Jeff Foxworthy thing.
Yeah. Right? Could we do that now or explain that, what that was? You Might Be a Gay Redneck If.
You might be.
That was one of the sketches that I had trouble with in rehearsals. Mm-hmm. I thought I was doing fine, but my apparently my rhythm was off, was not good. And it took me, did I do that sketch? Did that even make the show?
As far as what I read, it did, but maybe it was only in dress. Were they asking you to do kind of a Jeff Foxworthy twang? Is that what the character they wanted?
No problem. It's just I couldn't get the rhythm down, and it sounds moronic to say that, but it's, you know, mm-hmm. comedy's stand-up's timing, and my timing, I just couldn't grasp that.
You know, sometimes
it's embarrassing to admit, but.
Well, it was your first time. It took me 80 shows to get my rhythm down on that fucker, you know, so.
Yeah.
Go ahead, David.
And when I did a Jeff Foxworthy once, and it was a combination of, you know, you have the redneck, and then he's got the way that he does it, and I think they're trying to emulate that. And so I was doing the same thing, where, like, do you go up at the end, do you go down at the end? I was You Might Be the Ebola Virus, and it was like, if people see you and run, there's a good chance you might be the Ebola virus. If people look under a microscope and see that the zygote, and I gave a long description,
right?
You might be, there's a good, you know, so it, that was the same thing. It's like you have, there's a couple different components to it, not just a voice, like you're Southern, but your Southern might be a little different than his Southern. And then how his rhythm is, how he does it to match, and those things mm-hmm. they look for. And then I've had impressions taken away from me during the week.
That's, oh, sorry.
That's rough.
And they give it to Dana. I didn't mean to.
Getting engaged is special for so many reasons. You know, you plan the perfect proposal. You've probably been proposed to a lot, Dana. Celebrate the love.
I proposed to myself a couple so times. Far.
I do it in the mirror just to
do
see.
Do you take yourself?
You look forward to the love you'll build for the rest of your lives. The only part that's not so special. Wah, wah, shopping for an engagement ring. You don't know what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, which most guys don't, you got to hustle over to BlueNile.com. That's where they come in.
That BlueNile.com is the original online jeweler. Since 1999, they've helped millions of couples create their perfect engagement ring.
With Blue Nile, you can create a bigger, more brilliant piece than you can imagine at a price you won't find at a traditional jeweler.
Nope, they're committed to ensuring that the highest ethical standards are observed when sourcing diamonds and jewelry, David.
Blue Nile also offers a diamond price guarantee, which means that they can usually meet or beat a competitor's price on a comparable diamond. That's what you don't want to find out later, that you spent way too much, because they cost a lot anyway. I mean, they're diamonds.
Yeah, you're off the reservation when you're going door to door and going into all these jewelry stores and they're selling you, and then you have a much better way to do this. You don't want to find out that you paid multiple months' salary on a ring.
Right,
you could have gotten at a much better deal. I mean, I'm just going to say it. Blue Nile's a no-brainer.
When you make a lifelong commitment, so does Blue Nile. You get guaranteed service and repair for life.
Yes.
And don't worry, your secret's safe. Every Blue Nile order is insured and arrives in packaging that won't give it away, because that can ruin it. Sometimes if I was getting a diamond ring, I would make sure they put on the outside porn so you wouldn't think it was a diamond ring.
I always have to say big, non-surprising diamond ring. That'd be on the outside of the package. No, you want it hidden in secret so that the loved one opens it and is doubly excited because they didn't see it coming.
They offer 100% satisfaction guarantee with guaranteed free shipping and returns. Mm-hmm. Right now, you can get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more with code FLY at BlueNile.com. That's $50 off with code FLY at BlueNile.com.
Let's say it again. That's $50 off with code FLY at BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
All right. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
That's right.
How is your social battery right now, Dana?
Social battery is it's a little slow. I probably could kick it up a little bit, kick it up a notch.
Mm-hmm. You're running at about 38% on your social battery.
I'm not going to say 38, but I'm going to say it's over 30, less than 50. You do the math.
When my social battery gets under like 70, I get nervous and have to plug it in.
Right.
You know, this summer, you got to bring it because everyone's going to be out and about. You can kind of hide in winter, but listen, you got it. Sometimes therapy is a way to get your thoughts together, juice up your battery, and get back out there, because a lot of that is social anxiety.
Yeah, and it's all in your head. Like everything starts there. And so with BetterHelp, you're going to get advice and get unstuck and start get out in the world. And that's just good for your brain.
Yeah, listen, whether you've been to therapy personally before, I think online is probably so much easier. Like, I've been to therapy. And just the fact that my biggest fear is like, I couldn't change. Like, what if you get someone you don't like, or what that's going to steer your life kind of. So with BetterHelp, if you don't like your therapist, you can switch. There's no additional cost.
And if you're out on the off the reservation, seeing a regular therapist, then you have to get a secondary therapist to coach you how to get rid of the first therapist. With BetterHelp, super, super easy.
Yeah, yes. You don't want that.
It's
convenient.
That.
It's flexible. Suits your schedule. Give it a try. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/FOTW today. That gets you 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/FOTW. You licked Horatio Sanz's face in Versace Mother.
I don't remember that. I could have.
What's Versace Mother?
Since then.
This is Johnny's hosting gig from 35 years ago, and I'm asking him to tell me right now.
No, I remember Dukes of Hazzard, I remember. I ran to see that one. Dukes of Hazzard, I remember. He was in that movie.
Yes. Well, you've had a pretty big film career, too. Yeah. There's been a lot of movies besides Jackass.
Yeah, I'm lucky to have feet in both areas, but...
And the Special Olympics one was edgy. Could we do that now? But it was very funny.
I read The Ringer. I remember reading
Special
that.
Special Olympics were on the was on board. Like, they that movie wouldn't have got made if Tim Shriver was not on board with it. And
good.
Yeah. So I'm proud of that film. I stand by it.
One of my son's favorites. He brought it up today.
You know what? Yeah. I think, Johnny, I read that movie. I think what happened maybe, and you would know more, but maybe just on the surface, no one saw it or bothered to see any messages or anything nice about it. They just said, oh, you can't do that.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Because if you watch it, you know, it was sweet. And I mean, of course, we went for it as far as comedy goes. But you had to kind of samurai get the message out there. So, I mean, I made so many great friends on that film, you know. Eddie Barbanel, who was in John Taylor, they both appeared in Jackass 3, two of the guys. Eddie Barbanel is like a Borscht Belt comic. He is so funny.
When you do Jackass 3, do you audition these new people? What is that process like?
We reached out to people we knew mostly. And we brought them in too. Jeff and I talked to them, brought each cast member in to talk to them, because at the end of the day, we have to get along with you. We have to like having you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's the biggest hurdle to get over. And then we did a 2-day test in December 2019. Spike Jonze, to his credit's like, we're older now. How's this going to look? Is this going to look sweaty? We not only need to test the new people, but we need to test the old guys to see how it looks. And so we did. Yeah. And that's how we tested the new cast. We just shot it like a film for 2 days. Did about 3 or 4 bits a day. And a lot mm-hmm. made the film. So that's
is a hard part of it. Is a hard part of it, like, because you don't want people to submit. You don't want people getting hurt. You don't want any legal problems. And I'm sure people say they'd be good. They'll do anything for you. Like, they just want to be in it. They'll do anything, and they'll, and you got to be careful of that.
With those people, because it could look a little dark. I mean, someone like, oh, we'll do anything. Suddenly they're something to fight against, right?
Yeah.
It's not as enjoyable to watch as a viewer. Like, if you watch the B thing with Steve-O, and he's not howling and screaming and terrified, it's not as funny. If he's just standing there like a big deal, there goes the comedy. So
that's
we have
the
to
human
hire
part.
People who are very honest about their emotions.
Yeah, and if you find something they don't like, then do that. And also the heavyset guy that went down the ramp and flew and kept wiping out, he was tougher than I thought. He could do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he's very athletic, Zach. Zach Holmes. He's done some really gnarly stuff. And he's one of those guys that would have done anything Jeff and I asked. And that's a lot of responsibility to have over someone. And Jeff even took him aside one day. We were shooting somewhere, and there was like a 60-foot platform up there. It was unrelated to us. It was a big wooden platform, 60 feet off the ground. And Jeff's like, hey, Zach, I think for this next bit, we want you to jump off that platform. And, you know, we'll put some...
into a cup of piss.
Yeah. We'll put some mattresses down.
I could work there.
For you.
Yeah.
And he got so upset. He got so sad and scared because he's like, I'm going to do it. And I was at first, I was going along with Jeff trying to be, we need you to do that. But I saw that he was really going to do it. And I just walked away because I couldn't do that to him any longer, but he was definitely going to do it. And then finally we let him off the hook. Like, we're not going to ask you to fucking jump off something 60 foot high onto a mattress.
Well, I just dove into cactuses. Yeah, he does. Right. He does some of that stuff where you think it's too much. Flying into the cactus, I thought, could get in your eye. You just never know. I mean, when the guy that went down the slide and you covered his arms, you know what I mean? In the oil slide, and then he
Right. Yeah, oh, Eric.
And you could snap your head. I mean, my God, I go, you just get lucky, like, everything's okay.
Yeah. I was in the hospital while they filmed that.
You were?
Really?
Right before.
After the bull?
Yeah. And we had another bull bit to do that day. I was going to do 2 bull bits. But after they took me away in the ambulance, none of the guys, they're like, fuck you. We're not doing anything with the bull.
It feels kind of like there's a rhythm to it. You know, it's almost like sex. It's like there's anxiety and dread, then there's fear and pain, and then there's resolution and laughter and relief. You know, each set has the emotionality of these three quadrants. Are you and Spike aware of that when you're editing it? Like, this is how much anxiety and dread. Now we've set it up, and now we're going to show, you know what I mean? Because it really, really works on an emotional and funny level.
Pacing has a lot to do with Jackass, because you don't want to put too many like gross bits in a row or too many big stunts in a row. You got to have, if you see something gnarly, or you got to have a little palate cleanser after that.
Yeah.
And then we space everything out, and we have to space the cast out. You don't want too much of this or that.
Yeah.
So pacing is something Jeff and I and Spike really focus on in the edit.
Like, there's a little bit with just a little bit of dialogue more than a stunt. It's like might end in something small, but it is a little palate cleanser. I like that. I like also the guitar, the crunch of whatever is another genius. Just one more thing that makes it work.
Yeah. Thank you. That song, though, if you listen to it, it's so different once the lyrics kick in. It's just a beautiful, like, wistful song once the lyrics kick in. But it sounds just like some hillbilly hoedown at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's something different.
The parts you use are high qual.
Johnny,
I had a question for Dana.
David, I'm just interested a little bit in just you being from Tennessee, and you have some manner about you that's very sort of country, and it's very polite and sincere. And I just wonder, you know, just something about the culture of Tennessee. I'm the only Tennessee person I do is Al Gore. And when I do him, he's a very earnest and sincere man. We're going to do better because we have to with climate change. And so you have kind of this country. I'm not saying Dolly Parton, but there's a sincerity and likability about you. Anyway, I'm just observing as I've gotten to know you.
Well, thank you. That's very kind. Yeah. Dolly grew up about 20 minutes from where I was. So
have you ever met her and hung out with her?
You know, this is how this I have social anxiety sometimes, right? And so I was at Yamashiro's.
Oh, yeah.
Up on, in Los Angeles.
It's, in L.A. You know,
It's a restaurant. Sushi. Yeah, it's a sushi place. And Dolly Parton walks out of the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And I just, and it was like 10 years ago. And I just froze. And I'm like, I didn't want, as much as I wanted to meet her, I didn't want to bother her because I'm sure people grab her. She walks out of the bathroom all the time. And I just couldn't do it. So I froze up and I've regretted it ever since. Right. But I get real social anxiety sometimes. And so that was my delicate.
I do that too. People do that. I think that's a polite way to go. You sometimes kick yourself, but it is probably the most polite way to go.
Is to, let them be.
Yeah, because, you know, you have it both ways.
Huh?
But if you saw her and she came up to you, it'd be fun. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
I would drop. I would scream. Yeah.
I don't think any of us, normal people, you know, until you're Brando or something, how do you attach yourself to your own celebrity? I had a masseuse once in Malibu in the 90s, and she was massaging Bob Dylan. And she said Bob Dylan said to her, I've never caught up with my fame, you know. He's just Robert Zimmerman, and you're Johnny Knoxville, and so. But to me, you're just really famous, and like, of course, you go talk to Dolly. But I get that. I don't ever think I'm a famous person. I don't have no connection to it at all. And my wife reminds me if I do. Yeah,
Bob Dylan and his zingers. I was born very far from my home, and I was just trying to get back home again. At the beginning of No Direction Home.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he doesn't quite do that. But I love his later stuff. And I love when he does do banter with the audience, some of these bootleg concert films, and he does just the worst jokes. Hey, did you hear about the man who had five penises? His pants fit him like a glove. It's just terrible.
Anyway, here's like a Rolling Stone.
Here's blowing in the wind.
By the way, that's notorious. I saw Adele. She was actually funny. I saw Lionel Richie. They both were doing jokes between like almost every song, but they were working. And I was like, God damn, they have a better act than I do. And they have their singing.
Yeah, so Dolly does jokes, and they're amazing. She has such great timing.
Yeah, she's a charmer. She hosted SNL, too. And this was probably, I don't know, 89 or something. She says, there's a little boy lives about 10 miles away from me, and I think someday he's going to host SNL. I said, what's his name? It's Johnny Knoxville. And I go, you don't sound like Dolly Parton.
Yes. Did she say that?
No, I made it up.
Oh,
sorry.
God,
we ruined it.
I was like, Dolly knows who I am.
She for sure knows who you are.
Who doesn't know who you are, Johnny? I mean, but you know, my wife, when I first, someone asked for my autograph, and my wife, who I've been with since 1950, she she goes, oh, you're famous now. It was so epiphanal. Like, you mean all famous people are just people. They're just somebody who got famous. He goes, oh, you're famous. Wow, you're famous. That's unbelievable. I go, thank you, dear. No, she's listening.
You're like, I'm just a guy from Montana.
I'm just kidding, sweetheart.
Everyone is just someone from somewhere because they go, oh, I'm just from Arizona. I'm from Tennessee. But it's very rare that people are just born in Beverly Hills famous. You know, they're always coming here. Everyone's from somewhere, so they never quite believe it's happening. All right, we should let Johnny go. I think he's been a good sport.
You on a press junket? You got 5 hours lined up?
No, he's probably done. He's almost done.
Are you going to have lunch?
Yeah, I do NPR next.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. Oh, they're exciting. They're exciting. Yeah.
Good.
Get ready for bees and balls questions.
Johnny Knoxville will be joining us next on
Johnny. Tell us again why you wear glasses.
Anyway, get ready for the hard hitting flannels, Mr. Knoxville. Why the red flannel in the dark glasses?
Can you show the audience your penis?
Can you now proceed to the plastic punishment room where we will spray with things until you pass out? Hi, I'm NPR.
Can I fit my ring finger down your pee hole? Let's give it a shot.
You probably could.
Oh, that was a real question.
I broke my penis once.
Who hasn't?
A motorcycle, and I had the catheter for 3.5 years afterwards. It was with a catheter.
Jeez,
like,
did you forget
small,
to take it out?
Like bigger than a number two pencil. And I'd have to jam that down the head of my penis.
Sick.
So it hit my bladder. So you could probably get a AAA battery or your pinky in there. We'll see.
But fucking aren't you happy A. every day you wake up then and you kind of, maybe get some coffee. Oh, I don't have a pencil up my dick. God
That's
damn,
so
what a great
good.
Day it
no,
is.
No, but after you film a Jackass film, like for me, it's like I got to the end of the film and I'm like, I'm still walking. And
yeah.
And I'm not even trying to make a joke. That's how, you go into it, like not knowing how you're going to come out of it. And it's such a relief that, okay, I'm still walking. I'm still, you know, have control of my faculties, semi.
I can pee without pulling it out of my dick.
Is this your last fight before the Thriller in Manila? Or is this you don't know yet?
Well, I think we could do another one. But if so, I would step back and try to and sit next to Jeff behind the camera. Because I can't, like, I've unfortunately seen my last, you know, got in with my last bull.
I think...
do that
if you're out there laughing with everybody. I think it's okay. I think if you're still part of it and you're laughing and you're setting people up, I think as long as you're in the mix.
I would love to volunteer to be suspended by a 300-foot crane. Nothing physical, just suspended by 1 foot and kind of swing me over Times Square or something.
I'm just
throwing it out there. I'm available, but I want a really tight knot. I mean, I want to be really attached.
I'll do a show with you for ABC Family called Jackass Juniors, and we have little kids, and we just push them into trains and walls and stuff.
We thought about that. It was just like, it's like, oh, that's a terrible idea. But it's funny.
We're going to call it Ask Jack. I have a show called Ask Jack, where no one gets hurt, and they just have lunch. It's in the talk. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I'll pitch it.
All right.
Yeah, it's called Ask Jack's Delight. It doesn't matter now. My agent will contact your people. Anyway, Johnny Knoxville, loved hanging out with you.
You're a great guy. You're always nice, quiet in person, nice dude. Out when I see you, very cool. And thanks for coming on.
It's a pleasure. I really sincerely appreciate you having me on.
Thanks, guys. Next week, we've got John Lovett.
Hello.
Fly on the Wall has been a presentation of Cadence 13.
Please listen, then rate, review, and follow all episodes.
Executive produced by Dana Carvey and David Spade, Chris Corcoran of Cadence 13, and Charlie Finan of Brillstein Entertainment. Production and engineering led by Greg Holtzman, Richard Cook, Serena Regan, and Chris Basil of Cadence 13.